all of a sudden, the trees are white again. So what happens to the moth?
It becomes, the white morph becomes prevalent again.
Is the moth itself making a choice on whether or not it is white or it is black?
Absolutely not. It is natural selection. Which one is easier to get to?
But at this time, we're having trouble figuring this point out. We've got to make sense of it all. And that's where Charles Darwin comes in.
And starts making sense of all of this. Before Darwin, this is what we've got to establish. The Western world, our world, the world that we are used to, the world that has taught us all the things that we know. The Western world. So this is talking about Europe, America, the Western world pre-Darwin.
First off, we talk about Socrates and Plato. These great philosophers in Greek and Roman times, these guys set so many ideas up
back then, and they just stayed for the longest time.
They stayed for hundreds and hundreds of years. Socrates and Plato are saying that only essences matter, okay? Only the type or the form. Tables are tables are tables and always shall be tables. It is their essence. It is what they are. They are tables. No matter whether they are a rectangular table, a round table, a tall table, or a short table, a coffee table, or an end table, they are a table.
Table is table.
They're all variants on this ideal, perfect, exact table.
There is a table out there
that is the exact table, the table that we must all own and possess, the perfect table. And all of the tables that we get are just variants of said table.
In the same idea, to them, are people, animals, everything.
There is the essence, and there is that perfect essence. This is established and stays for a long time. A table is a table, a chair is a chair. You can't turn a chair into a table. It's a chair. Of course, if you cut the back off the chair, then we go into Christianity taking dominance. Christianity becomes predominant. Christianity says that there is a great ladder of life, a chain of being, a hierarchy. There is a hierarchy to everything. The reason this is important, this skill in after all starts with, the bottom is inanimate objects. Remember that table?
Table.
Table's at the bottom. Table, chair, that's the bottom. Now this is a chain of being or a ladder of life, so it has some value to it. Right above the table are plants. They don't hold plants in too high a regard, but that's okay. They're plants. They won't mind. They'll never know. Then we've got lower animals, and then we have man. This is where it really matters. Other two, got angels and God. Angels and God we'll come back to and talk about for a second, because this is what biology is initially getting funded to do, is figure out how we can prove the existence of angels and God. But the important thing to take away from initially here is that man is not an animal in their eyes. Man is not an animal. That's a big distinction.
And it's still difficult to get people to realize or to believe that man is an animal.
That's very good. Some of these early beliefs, these early views, and like I said, I am not saying this is how it is now either. The Pope, a couple of popes ago, they said evolution was okay. I'm pretty sure. I'm 95% sure it was a Pope. Like I said, I'm not very good with that. But anyway, God initially is talking about species are unchanging. Species are unchanging. So if you're something, you are that thing, you never change. Unchanging. People are people are people. Always have been, always will be people. The whole goal behind science is to show God's wisdom, all right? To show God's here. God has a plan. God has set all these things out. That's the whole goal of science at that point. Unfortunately, science was finding other things. We were coming up with this method.
We were thinking about things logically, and we came to the realization that we don't get to find this kind of stuff.
You cannot tell God, hey, I don't want you to do something. If there is a God, or if there isn't, regardless, if you do believe in one, I think we can all agree that he doesn't have to listen to us and would not probably listen to us, even if we asked really, really nicely to say, hey, sit out for a day. He's probably not going to listen. So that's where it becomes a problem. Science starts to realize, hey, this is too far for us.
This is something we don't get to talk about.
This is a place we don't get to go. Darwin is born, regular little kid, you know, nothing really that special in his early life. But in this time period, we're starting to find some really cool stuff, some really interesting stuff that causes some problems. We start finding fossils, paleontology. Problem child of science since its birth, always has been. So, we got this order, but all of a sudden, we thought this stuff never changed. So why is it that we find other animals buried, but we never find any men?
We never find humans. We find these big, monstrous things that we've never seen before, but we don't find people.
That's weird, right? They've been there the whole time and unchanging. We have a couple of guys who start building ideas with this, and they're very safe with it at the beginning. They don't talk about man, angels, or God. They don't even really talk about animals. They talk about geology. They talk about the rock
and the earth. And people don't have a whole lot of strong feeling, or at least not at that time, about the rock and the earth.
So these guys, they didn't get in trouble. But they came to the idea, gradualism, things changing over time, uniformitarianism, the things we see, how time moves, how things happen, should stay relatively constant.
Time shouldn't just appear or disappear.
Both of these, and then the Earth, if it was created gradually, took millions of years. If it was gradually built, it would take millions of years. So both of these ideas, one in 1788, one in 1830, these are progressing and giving a time frame for things to happen. But they're making sure that they're pretty safe. We see these valley streams, canyons, geological events that they're talking about taking a long, long time. When somebody said, hey, I don't believe in what Galen said, what happened to the poor guy? Set on fire. So people are very, very safe with their statements. They make sure that they're only going after things that are safe to go after. Lamarck, a lot of people, Jean-Baptiste Lamarck, couldn't sell a novel, but he's an early botanist, and we call him the father of paleontology. There's one of the museums, in Paris that's got wings dedicated to him. He's like the first paleontologist. He is the first person talking about these bones, looking at these bones, going, wow, this is cool. He says he believes that species changed over time. He says, look at these weird things. Well, he's not holding them up, right? Pointing at them in the ground. Look at these weird things. They had to turn into something else. He sees some of these other weird ones that are around. That has to be something that turns into that, right? Got something going on. Well, Lamarck believed in the theory of acquired characteristics. Lamarck, a lot of people don't really care for Lamarck. They don't think he's that great because Lamarck says that you're going to acquire traits from your parents.
You're going to acquire traits from your parents that they gain throughout their lives. What does that really mean?
One giraffe sees a leaf. Giraffe. Tree. Leaves. Giraffe stretches its head up and its neck and it gets a leaf. It keeps stretching and stretching and stretching until its neck stretches. When it has a baby, when it has a child, that child has a longer neck because that giraffe stretched its neck out. Lamarck goes out on a limb.
Limb breaks out from under him, right? We know that
if my father goes out and bolts up, right, has these huge muscles. When my mother gives birth to me,
am I going to have giant muscles?
These things that happen during the life, during your lifetime, cannot be passed on. Lamarck had it wrong, but he had the guts to go out there and say something. He knew there were changes over time. He just didn't hit it. He did not hit that ball. It went right past him. Strike. Ligaments. There are two big, big problems with this. First one is a word I guarantee you I will at some point test you on.
Teleological.
The reason I will test you on the word teleological, it means goal-oriented. This process is goal-oriented. These things are happening to satisfy a need.
We find evolution is not goal-oriented.
It is not trying to satisfy some need of a species.
We see these changes in characteristics happening randomly.
Another big problem. What happens when you color your hair? Do your kids get colored hair?
No. How about a tattoo? You get a tattoo, and then you have a kid. Does your kid have a tattoo? Like a faded tattoo, if your wife didn't have one? Or, you know, half a tattoo?
Yeah, like half a Popeye's face or something?
No. No.
We don't get that. We see that in humans. But remember, at this point in time, we're not tying humans. We're not tying man to animals. All we really see are, we kind of look at some rats, and we kind of look at some cats, and, you know, stuff like that. So we don't have a really good basis. There are a few naturalists who go out, but they don't really watch the animals. You know what naturalists of that time did? They went out and killed them. They would go out and they would kill the animals to bring them back for the museum to put up and say, hey, look at this giant cat. Or, hey, look at this big bear, right? Hey, look at this elephant. That was what they did. They just assumed there would always be more. There'll just always be more. So I'm just going to shoot this elephant, and it won't matter. I'm going to take this elephant down one way or another. It doesn't matter. I'm going to kill this lion. It doesn't matter. There'll be another one. I see a bunch of lions. It's fine. That's what they believed in that. There will be more. He goes out on a limb and he says all this, and then he actually runs experiments. They cut the tails off rats and then let them breed. The babies have tails. The tails aren't any shorter, or like half as long. Nope. But the parents didn't have tails. Yeah, well. Really smart guy. Really smart. Gutsy. But didn't get it. Did not get it. But he sets it up. So while he still misses, he makes enough of a save. So like volleyball, right? He misses the ball, but it bounces off him just enough that Darwin can get it. And Darwin makes a run. Let's talk about who Darwin was for a second. He wanted to be a doctor. His dad was a doctor. His dad lived. It was more his dad wanted him to be a doctor. But he was going to be a doctor. He was in med school. He sat in on some surgeries, and he didn't want to be a doctor anymore. Many, many surgeries were without anesthesia. You'll be fine. You had plenty of people dying from shock on the operating table. Lots of blood, lots of flailing. Ugly, ugly situation. Darwin sees, I think it was, so he decides that he needs a break from life after that. It was that stressful, which, so what does he do? He goes on a cruise. His dad's got money. What's the only way to get out of the house then? By boat. So he goes on a cruise. On a ship called the Beagle. He goes sailing for 5 years and he collects specimens, mostly birds. He didn't actually believe in evolution. He didn't even really, really like the idea until a year after he had come back. He just kept looking at the things he had found and said, you know what? I don't like this. It's not what I believe in, but it looks like it's right. He was a devout Christian. He goes all around the world. All around the world. He also goes to a very special place called the Galapagos Islands. Some place that is very, very isolated. And he finds all sorts of important evidence. He finds geographic variation of species on the mainland. So depending on where you are on the map, you see species that are, at that point, the same species. Okay, you see the same species. You see birds, birds, birds. Types of birds, finch, finch, finch. But these finch are different in different places. Different in different places. This made him doubt the fixed nature of species. The islands, the Galapagos Islands especially. He would see these finches out on this island. They have all these different adaptations based off of what food they eat. But if you take the head off all the finches, you can't tell the difference. They all look the same. They're all more or less the same. Except they're all able to eat something different. They had these modifications, these slight mutations that changed how their beak worked. Some of them were better at eating X, some of them were better at eating Y, some were better at eating insects, some were better cracking nuts, some were better at eating plants. They went towards whatever it was, they ate more of whatever it was that they were good at. They didn't fight against one that was really good at eating bugs. The tree finches, the vegetarian finches, they didn't go, hey, I'm going to try and eat bugs too. No, that guy's so good at it. I'm not messing with that. I'm going to go eat plants. I'm better at eating plants. So they had these natural changes that naturally happen. These natural little mutations. We saw that there are always mutations. These mutations changed how their beaks were formed. As those changes happen, they were pulled towards a different food source. This also changes your physiology. Remember when I talked about what you eat is determined by what you can eat? We're omnivores. We can eat little bits of everything. But specialized eaters
have to be specialized to deal with the toxins that every animal and plant produces in order to keep you from eating large volumes of them.
Remember the butterfly and the milkweed. As you start being better at eating something, you've got to develop better chemical reactions for dealing with them. As you develop better chemical reactions for dealing with them,
you start getting further and further away from the other parts of your group. Eventually, that Y opens up. Remember when I was drawing phylogenies?
Those branches, that common ancestor, the finch that flew to the island, the finches
that flew to the island, went down one path and down another. That's what that opening is. That's what that split means.
We see these adaptive radiations. Adaptive radiations are when these animals come into a new environment and there are all sorts of niches open. There's a spot to eat bugs, and there's a spot to eat plants, and there's a spot to eat nuts.
Nobody's taking advantage of anything. We're taking it all. We're going to take it all, and some of us are going to get to be much, much better at eating X. Some of us are going to get much, much better at eating Y. And eventually,
not intentionally, not as a goal, the population comes in, they start filling these new roles, and they evolve to be better at it.
Why? How do we choose? Do we choose to evolve? No. How do we evolve? How does it bring us towards that?
This is where we talk about survival of the fittest. Best at doing whatever it is. Survival of the fittest is not like throwing two things in Thunderdome, right?
No. It is, I'm good at this. I'm good at drawing. You're good at writing. So you turn into the writers, and I turn into the drawers. We naturally start doing the thing we're good at, and we get so ingrained and so locked and so far that we change. Only my children, if I'm a drawer, and I'm supposed to be, my family is supposed to be drawers, only my children who are good at drawing are going to succeed. Any of my children who are bad at drawing aren't going to succeed. Dead, right? No food, no money, gone.
Children who are good at drawing, well, if child Bob is better than child Bill at drawing, Bob's going to be more successful, more kids going towards Bob. Bob's kids are just better. This is if drawing is genetically. So on and so forth. That's what these adaptive radiations are.
That's how we get speciation.
Getting better and better at fitting that role. So we see all these giant armadillo fossils, or megalodons. They're not really giant armadillos. You see all these giant fossils, but we never see living ones. This is something Darwin sees. He sees these huge fossils that Lamarck is finding, sticking in museums. He goes, hey, check this out. Right? But all these people bring back dead armadillos, and all those dead armadillos are like that big. This thing's a house. That doesn't work, right? That doesn't make sense. It had to have changed. There has to be something different going on. So this is a whole another point for Darwin. He sees fossils that don't fit. Fossils that make no sense to him. Maybe one of them went extinct and a new one evolved from a different common ancestor. Or from a different radiation, which is one thing that we'll also see, which is really interesting. Animals evolve in similar ways to fill similar niches. If something's good for doing X, eventually a whole bunch of animals are going to be doing it that way, in one way or another. And we'll see that just happenstancy. If something's really efficient, sooner or later you're going to go to it. Because in reality, this whole pathway we've all been on is a pathway we've all been on. If so, we all have similar initial genetic information that we're building from. There are only certain directions we can go at this point. We're still limited by those things that happen way down here in the first few organisms. Those changes, those locks, those traps carry with us. He also saw, and this is real, he also saw some crazy stuff that people were doing. Pigeon breeding was this huge popular thing in England at the time. It still is fairly popular. They breed for the craziest things you can imagine. Look at this poor guy's beak. Look at this poor guy's neck. Right? Look at this stuff. You can select for these crazy, useless, horrible, mean mutations. You can breed for them. You want to, you can do it. That's how it works. They're there. Is that helpful? Does this look like it's going to be helpful to the pigeon for flying? Probably not. It looks like it's going to slow it down a lot. So in nature, we selected against. But artificially, we can make it happen. Breeding, breeding, breeding. Same way we can make different colors of cats and dogs and breeds of dogs. We're just breeding for different little mutations.
I like pigeons with big chests. So, I breed pigeons with big chests. And that one has a bigger one. And that one's got a bigger one. Or a big chest. Okay, breed those and those and those and gigantic chests.
That's how it works. That is how it works. You can do that.
They do that in horse breeding. They do that in... And we've got some other things that we're doing now with artificial selection.
Unless they have major genotypical differences, unless their genotypes are very, very different, they will still be able to interbreed, still be able to have viable offspring, and still be the same species.
We're going to talk about one other guy two more guys before we finish with Darwin. Thomas Malthus. Now, I will tell you, I'm going to talk about all these guys a lot. I would know their names, just like I do with all the people I name. Malthus isn't a scientist. He's a writer. Malthus comes up with two big ideas. Number one, not all young can survive. And that's very true, right? Not every child makes it. Not every animal's child, not every fledgling chick survives. Only those that can get through, only those that can survive, only those that can make it, only those with enough energy, resources, whatever. He also worried about overpopulation. This guy is in the early 1800s, and he's scared of overpopulation then. He realized a little bit about a certain type of growth. What type of population growth is he worried about?
Exponential
growth. What have we seen recently? Exponential growth, right? This is at the beginning of that Industrial Revolution. He's seeing this ease of life starting, and he's saying, holy moly, this is going to go. We could really, really go crazy with population here. Look at it. Be wary. What happens? But Darwin does. Darwin listens. He takes a lot of this idea from Malthus, okay? It's not all young can survive, and the growth can just kind of go. If everything lived, we would just grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. Darwin, I said he was devout. He did not like the theory of evolution. He didn't want to publish it. He was scared. He had written it all up, and he said, you know what? I'm not doing it. I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to keep it. I'll have it. Oh, well. I'm just going to hide it. Then he gets a letter from his buddy, Alfred Russel Wallace. Wallace goes, hey, I got this idea. It's called the theory of natural selection. And Darwin says, nah, I've got to publish it. Somebody else is going to do it. And not only are they going to do it, but they're going to say the exact same thing I was going to say. Well, they're my friend. I'll take it. I'll see what happens. He wasn't going to publish it at all until he found out somebody else would. He was so scared that this finally pushed him into it. Good.
That Darwin?
That's Wallace.
No, I mean, that had already written the two books.
Yes. Darwin had already written the two books. I should probably put that. Because I'm already talking about Darwin in the side notes, that's why I could just go to front. I'll put Darwin in there. So, Darwin's got two books written. All right, somebody else is calling my hand. I gotta lay the cards down and see where they fall. So what was he really saying, though? Okay, what is the theory of natural selection? We find out that Darwin ends up being okay, and we build. Remember, we don't really, really get it until the new synthesis, until we get that other information from Mendel, right? It was already out there, but Darwin just didn't find it because he stopped looking. He was scared. Theory of natural selection. Number one, individuals in the population must be different. Number one principle. Okay? Individuals are different. The variation, as I said, drawers, right, has to be heritable. You have to be able to inherit that variation. Here comes Malthus, right? If not all the babies survive, only some are going to make it to reproductive age. Only some. So those with variations that can be inherited, that are more successful, that do not die, should be able to put and have a greater population, a greater contribution, more kids to the next generation. So some of those characteristics will be in subsequent generations. It's going to change, right? Things are going to change. Why? You've got a bunch of kids. Population differs. A, B, B, B. Okay, so we got a bunch of individuals. This difference, it can be inherited, passed on to your kids. Some of these individuals don't make it. We're going to say some of the A's are not as successful. So, when we have new children,
we'll say that you have two kids.
Boom, boom, boom! All of a sudden, the proportion of A's different. Some more A's can't survive. Even a lower proportion of the population.
So on and so forth. So on and so forth.
The same way with the mom.
So what happens,
let's say that A is the black morph and B is the white morph, when we change the background, all of a sudden, B's aren't making it, A's are.
One, two, three, four.
Again, more. Backwards to the other direction.
Backwards the other way. Okay.
So there are a few other things I want to say before I hand out the eval. Remember that this is descent with modification. Okay. I'll talk about that like next time. I want you guys to remember this point. Okay. Remember this point. Individuals cannot evolve. No matter how many stupid television commercials you see, they say, this person has evolved. It's a species that can evolve, not an individual.
Individuals can acclimate, they can get used to their environment. That's what they do.
Okay? They do not evolve. I cannot evolve. I can get used to my environment. I can become acclimated to the conditions of Arizona. But I do not evolve to be better at living in the desert, right? I don't. Humans could.
The species, Homo sapiens, certainly could.
Can I? Not a chance. Not a chance.
Okay.
Right. Well, we'll talk about how long a period of time next time. But this is the point that I feel like I have to get to almost immediately. And you've seen how these things are changing now. So while I talk about the drawers, was this helpful too for people? Was this better for some people? Trying to get a feel for how to add that in, make things a little more visual for certain groups of people who may have more difficulty auditory. Okay. All right, so you'll have 15-ish, 10-ish minutes. Okay. I went a little more ranty than I thought. To do the evaluations. Doesn't say so.